Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded on the 19th of November, 2010.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
I'm just going to start the recorder, and we're just going to have a conversation because it's been a unique week, and there are many things going on. So just so the folks that are listening know, John Bondurant's on. Is that okay with you, first time?
Sure.
Okay, well, John Bondurant's on the phone line from Memphis, Tennessee. He's the president of Bondurant Futures. In studio with us is Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Dan Zwicker with ADM Grain Group. Advocate Cater and Pete Manhart, too, of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. So, John, a couple of things. First, because we often wonder about this a little bit, and I think probably when you had a discussion with Dave Dickey, he suggested we might talk about cotton. But can you take that crop up for me real quick? I was looking at the chart on cotton. And I don't know when it's put in the ground and when it's harvested. And it looks like that the real push was old crop cotton. And does that really mean that'll take soybean acres out in the coming year?
That's a good question. I run through all my farm budgets, and basically cotton, beans, and corn are all equally profitable. The only difference is you have to have a cotton picker and a cotton module builder. And getting into cotton is expensive, so I'm not sure it takes very much in the way of acreage away.
Yeah, that was my next question, and I didn't know about the module builder. I was in Fayetteville over the past few days, and somebody was telling me about that. But I did ask the question whether there was how much equipment might be left in the South, and because you all tend to have many more crops than we do, and yep. A lot more machinery in the machine shed, is the equipment still there, do you think?
Yeah, I've got three cotton pickers, of which I've only used one in 4 years. But that's a problem. A lot of people have sold off their pickers, and South Americans are in here trying to buy used cotton pickers for sure because they're going to have a huge expansion of cotton.
My wife picked cotton back in the 80s. Would she be considered a used cotton picker?
Very good.
No, well, she grew up in Arkansas and they picked cotton.
Absolutely.
Well, there's a good way to start the show.
Well, you know, they used to raise cotton in southern Illinois. When I grew up as a kid, they were still a cotton gin in Cairo.
Oh, we had, we had a guy in Galesburg for the longest time who grew cotton and into the 80s and 90s.
In Galesburg?
Yeah. In that area, Knox County.
Wow.
Anyway. Okay, so the other thing, and I think really, and maybe we can just all take this up, but China has been just a real mover and a shaker in the marketplace. And Bernanke moves, and then China moves, and they're all trying to figure out what to do. And this week, it appears China stepped out of the market. Does anybody think that really has happened, Dan?
Probably in a short term, there's some movements that's been made by the government to at least try to slow demand down somewhat, and to crack down on speculators, so-called. So that probably has cooled things off a little bit, and then that has spilled over here in the U.S. market now. How long that cools things off and slows things down, I guess we'll have to wait and see on that. But, you know, it's similar to kind of maybe what happened here a couple years ago when we were, you know, visiting the $140, $150 oil and $8 corn and $16 soybeans as Congress was, you know, yapping about the speculative money running up prices. So, you know, politicians are politicians, and when they start getting involved, that makes everybody nervous. So if you've got big positions, you have a tendency to move to the sidelines.
No, and, of course, now they're talking about spec money just dumping out of the marketplace.
Well, it's some liquidation. They're backing off some, but, you know, I think it's here to stay. In fact, you got more money coming in as we go along, more ETF funds starting up, these computer-generated ones with no human emotion whatsoever. But, yeah, remember, China's doing this for a reason, and I think there's more to it. I think they've got serious problems or serious concerns. You know, it wasn't too long ago they said they'd do anything to make sure they got food security at any price whatsoever. So you got record corn production at record prices. Yes, part of it's speculative, but you got that huge, huge demand base. And until they see their economy slow down, this demand is going to remain under the marketplace.
So, John, when you look at the funds and the specs getting out this weekend, I guess first, do you think that's what really happened in the commodity markets?
Oh, yeah. Well, they're just massively long. So it doesn't, you know, I've always wondered, they're so long that when they try to come out, who's there to buy? I mean, they've bought in such incredible quantities, it's hard to get them out.
When they go out, the door isn't wide enough, and there's not enough of anybody to buy the length that they've got that they're wanting to get out of. So,
yeah,
you know, it's amazing what they still are long, and look at what they've got out of.
Yeah, I guess the only thing that's going to stop it is if the basis gets so strong that the board is really, really cheap, and that might stop it in its tracks. And the basis is getting kind of strong. You know, one thing I wonder about, and I've always wondered about, I think it was around 2004, the USDA mysteriously found all these millions and millions of tons of grains in China, rice, corn, cotton, you name it. And it never made any sense. I really sort of believe that that was all baloney, and all of a sudden we're realizing that they never had the stocks they said they had on paper. It certainly happened in cotton. I mean, they've had huge stocks of cotton, and all of a sudden cotton goes to $2.27 a pound in China. They were never there.
Hmm. Okay.
Is all of this slowing of government activities really going to slow down eating and clothing wearing? I don't think it will, truthfully.
No. It's kind of like price controls. It doesn't solve anything.
Well, here's the other thing. Because China has, what, 1.3 billion person population, right?
Right.
We have about 309 million in the United States. China's thought is that 25% of that 1.3 or something like 325 million, which would be bigger than we are, are actually are all middle class. Even if it's half of that amount, that's an enormous number of people that are wanting to be, as Pete said, clothed and fed in a better way than they have ever. I'm wondering, you know, we talked about this in the 90s and thought that Asia was ready. They weren't. Can they manage it this time around, do you think?
I'll pose a question to y'all.
Okay.
The U.S. record cotton yield per acre is something like 875 pounds. What would you suppose China's yield per acre in cotton would be?
Less than half that.
How about 1,100 pounds?
And ours is how much?
Like 875 record.
And China's is more.
Now, my second question is, do you believe it?
Well, how's that possible? I mean, haven't cotton yields in the United States been flat forever and a day?
No, they've been going up gradually. But, I mean, my point is, it's kind of unbelievable to think that as technologically advanced as U.S. agriculture is, that China out-yields us by 200 or 300 pounds.
Now, who's saying that it yields 1,100? China or us?
China.
Well, do they use fertilizer or chemicals or whatever is needed?
They have 1, 2, and 3 acre plots, and they dry their cotton on boards and things like that, pick it by hand, et cetera. But, I mean, it's just USDA jobs what the Chinese tell them. And all of a sudden, all of that sort of falling apart, and no one knows what China really has. I mean, it's a communist government putting out statistics to suit itself. And I don't know where, but the thing that interests me is the incredible amount of buying they've been doing. What's it about?
Well, if I'm a crusher in China, as I understand it today, a bean crusher, I can buy beans, have them shipped there, and I can make $3 a bushel, so I'm going to buy as many as I can. Because I can sell oil to the people, and I can sell the stuff to the meat makers and make $3 for every bushel I buy.
We ought to do
it. Why would I stop doing that?
You shouldn't. You shouldn't. But the question is, how can they get $3 a bushel when no one else can do it in the world?
Because they're short on supply.
Could well be. It's, these are very interesting times and hard to figure out what really is truth and non-truth. We have textile statistics out of China on a monthly basis, and I promise you there's not one person in the world that believes them. None. But they come out every day, every month, like clockwork.
Hmm. Okay. So are you feeling, how do you feel about the market over the next 3 months and then over the next 2 years? And maybe, John, we can start with you. Whether you feel like we're in a top of this market, or we put a top in the market in 08 and we're in a consolidation, where do we stand?
I think in Corn's position, I think maybe we got the tightest balance sheet ever. I would argue that you could probably add another 200 million bushels to ethanol usage if they don't mess up the year-end program.
But they, so you're, as long as they extend it, right?
Yeah, so I think that you can probably say that they've underestimated domestic feed consumption 100 to 200 million bushels because of all the fiasco of the stocks and all positions in September. And then if you want to go really bullish, let's say that China does buy cotton, corn from Argentina, 250 million. Let's just put that 250 million onto our exports, and now we're down to 200 million bushel carryover, which is essentially completely out, and the South isn't going to plant much early corn at all because we got high cotton prices, a lot of wheat's gone in, which precludes corn, and they're all equally profitable, so it's an explosive setup in my book on the corn. I think it's really explosive.
Dan? I want to disagree with it. I mean, you just look at the basis levels, you know, throughout the Corn Belt, and you can tell you that the corn supplies are tight. I think in the short run, the market probably got way ahead of itself. But the worry is what's going to happen next spring, next summer. There is absolutely no room for any kind of hiccup. Now, that doesn't mean to say that we ain't seen a top, and we could go sideways down, and maybe look back at these highs as something being something important. But if we're going to do that, it's going to have to, everything's going to have to fall the bear's way, and that's kind of difficult in a market like this. There's just so many issues out there that's hanging that's not going to go away. Now, in the short run, the market can forget about them, but in the long run, there's issues out there that the market is going to have to deal with. And you can look at the balance sheets. You know, you can read any balance sheet you want.
You mean demand issues to the positive side?
Yeah, demand is very positive. Supply, to me, whether it's you're talking about U.S. supplies or world supplies, there's just no room for any kind of hiccup in any kind of weather problem. The only thing that I continue to worry about, and I would not pull that off the table, is I don't think deflation is out of the off the table yet.
But deflation?
Deflation. I don't think that's been taken off the table yet. So I think that worries me. You look at the bond chart. The bond chart looks like that's going to be the new bear market of the year. If that happens, I don't know how everything else falls in place. But when you look at raw supply-demand fundamentals on corn and soybeans and even wheat, it's hard to be very negative.
Where do you stand?
Basically the same camp. I mean, technically short-term in here, it's kind of nasty. But we're seeing the corn market approach some uptrend lines. It's been established for a long time, some longer-term moving averages. And with China trying to manipulate the market here, they might show up as buyers here next week and take advantage of it. But where there's smoke, I think there's fire. I think this Asia thing is fairly explosive. Here domestic wise, here in the central part of the U.S., it's dry. I mean, It reminds me of 87. You don't get some moisture here this winter and dry this spring. It's really going to test production. I don't care if you have triple stack, quadruple stack, or whatever. You got to have some moisture to work with this spring.
Yeah, the last week or so has put a lot of people down because corn dropped 95 cents and beans $1.70. We had one up day this week where everybody was happy, and then we dropped more the next day than we'd went up. And it's over outside forces. When people really look at those sheets of what we've got and what we've been using, and I don't expect what we got using to go away, it's ready to be explosive at any time to the upside, even though they're sideways to lower now and have had 10 days of really nasty down stuff in corn and beans.
John, what'd you make of Dan's deflation comment?
I don't agree with that.
I didn't think you did. That's why I asked.
I think the bond market going down is inflationary, not deflationary. And I think Bernanke has gone crazy. I mean, we're printing money like gangbusters, and I think that's certainly a big to do with the enormous long positions we've seen. Is a lot of people are just terrified of paper money, and they've gone to buying commodities. Now they find out that commodities can go down, but basically I think they're right. I mean, I think I want to, as a speculator, I want to find things to buy rather than things to sell, because we just don't know what inflation's going to do. I mean, they're on a printing press binge of historic proportions.
But when's this money going to get to the average guy so he can chase the prices higher, though?
I don't know. I mean, I fear something like stagflation. Food prices go up, energy prices go up, and everybody is squeezed. We have inflation, but no jobs, so to speak, which would, that could happen. But, I mean, you might have grain prices go up while the general economy stays stagnant.
But basically, they've already done that. Go to the grocery store today and compare to what you paid a year ago.
Yeah, and there's no inflation.
Well, they exclude volatile.
I know it. That's not being, being sarcastic. They keep redefining what their deflation used to be, the PCE, personal consumption index, and that started shoring inflation. So now they go to the CPI because that's 40% rents, and that's their preferred inflation. Anything that doesn't show inflation, but good gosh, everything you buy is up.
Right. And see, that's one of my arguments is that I suppose everything gets to how you define what inflation is, currency devaluation or inflation. But by running up the price of commodities, whether it's food, textiles, energy, you're going to require the average citizen to spend their money on food and energy and clothing, and they really don't have any money for the so-called toys or consumer products that drive this economy. And when you've got an unemployment already at 10% or unemployment at 20%, it just looks to me like the higher commodity prices are going to make the economy worse in the long run rather than the short run.
I agree. Unless people get truly scared of money and just start going South America style and buying just as soon as I get a paycheck, spend it because it's going to be worth less the next day.
What about land? What do we think about property at this point? What's the latest sale? Have we
heard this week around Winona, what, 9,100, and around Pontiac, 7,400, and they paid cash, I believe. That's what we heard.
Those are both north of Bloomington and on the way towards Chicago.
Good black dirt. That wasn't the best, but it was good dirt.
It went for 9,100.
9,100 and 7,400.
A lot of 8,200, 8,500.
Oh, anybody that buys this is old hard money that's got cash because nobody's going to loan
them
money.
One of them supposedly wrote a check for
nobody's going to loan them money to buy that. So they're going to write checks. It's all going to be cash.
Yeah, banks aren't loaning money for much of anything. They've got all this money, but I don't know what they're not loaning it to people.
You're loaning it back to the government.
Okay.
You borrow at zero and lend them back at 2%, 3%, and 4%.
Yeah.
So why bother with us? We had the biggest land sale I've ever seen down here, 27,000 acres just recently, went for 4,000 an acre, which down here is a huge price. So it's going up here.
What's the highest cash rent, have you heard?
Oh, in reality, $150.
That's what you guys, is the high end down there?
Yeah. That would be ultra high.
What's an average down there?
It's hard to say.
100?
It depends on what the land is. If it's irrigated, if it's dry land, it can go, on rice land, you might go up to $200 if you've got a big base and big payment with it. But I'd say it'd be tough to get over 150 right now.
I kind of want to go back to your first comment where you didn't necessarily think cotton acres were going to rise that much in that area. Because I think that kind of goes against what a lot of people are thinking, at least at the moment. I haven't studied the situation down there at all, but I think I've heard people talk about maybe losing 3 million acres of soybeans to cotton. So are these guys smoking
marijuana,
the wacky weed?
Yes. Well, I get back to, I'm a big farmer. I run through my budgets all day. Now, you tell me, what am I going to plant if every one of them comes up with the same dollar profit, which is extraordinary. They all pencil in about $300 an acre.
I'd plant the one that had the least inputs, probably.
What about the ones got the most potential for additional profit?
They're all about the same. I mean, if you're planting irrigated cotton at figuring 1,000 pounds and hoping for 1,100, that's a good deal. But if you're planting irrigated beans and thinking 55 and hoping 70 to 75, that's a good deal. If you're planting 170 bushel irrigated corn thinking 200, they're all the same. You can make the same argument for each one of them.
So okay. What's your decision?
So what's your
then?
Choice then? Soybeans because they're less trouble?
Well, you mentioned yield potential, but what about price, though? What has most price potential?
Well, they're all about the same. I mean, if you put them down on a piece of paper, they all come out to the same net figure is what I'm saying.
Is cotton, when we look at next year's prices, that good compared to the old crop?
No, they're terrible. I mean, that's old crop cotton tonight has been down 30 cents, and it's 128. Well, new crop's 88.
Yeah, I looked at that. That's why I asked that question up front.
That's a big difference. If new crop were 128, we would plant the heck out of it, but it isn't. So you look at new crop beans, and they're not at such a big discount to old crop, and wheat is premiumed heavily, and we've planted a fair amount of winter wheat because double cropping wheat and beans is the most profitable enterprise for the Delta, and that's already happened, and that's also locked out cotton and corn.
So you're telling me that you don't think the needle's been moved much in your area?
I don't think it's moved that much.
What do you think the needle has been moved, if it's moved at all, for the Midwest or the whole growing region?
I'm just sitting in my little world, I'm wondering, what are you guys going to do about corn on corn?
Well, a lot of guys saw what went wrong last year and feels that it could be corrected this year. And guys did a lot of deep tillage ripping, so I think they're optimistic to come back and give it another whirl.
You know, I've been out 10 days with the corn growers on their Farm Bill listening session, and this has only been maybe 100 folks from Mount Vernon to Rochelle. And we survey them and ask them this question, what they're going to do next year, with corn in particular. And I haven't seen the final numbers, but the quick answers come up and then they go away on the screens, and it's been no change from one end of the state to the other.
That's the way I'm reading it. I don't think the needle's been moved very much. Now, you know, you'll talk to one guy, he's going to maybe go corn, but talking to guys in our backyard here in East Central Illinois, they've got burnt so bad on corn the last couple of years that they're not sure they want to take that stress on again and take a look at beans. I heard agronomists speak this past week that says the compaction problem was a major ingredient to these low yields here on corn, and that issue hasn't gone away. That takes a couple of years for that issue to go away. So if you listen to him, you get nervous if you were one that had low corn yields this past year, so you're inclined to maybe go more beans. But But that's where I think, you know, this is going to be the issue sometime after the first of the year. Now, the market might decide to grab a hold of it earlier, but, I mean, the planning mix and moving that needle is going to be real interesting as we, I think, go through the February time frame that a lot of farmers look at as kind of downside protection type stuff.
Very few farmers here did not have an opportunity to do whatever field work they needed this fall, and most of them have went ahead with their normal putting anhydrous on. I've got a very few farmers that said, I'm going to work all the ground, but I'm going to wait till spring to see where we're at before I decide what the mix is. But that's few and far between.
What about fertilizer prices going up?
They've already purchased it. They've already got it locked in most areas. Really have it locked in.
Really? That's surprising. That's unfarmer-like.
And you've got a lot of people that's totally stopped putting nitrogen on because it's too dry.
Yeah.
Yep. It's too dry.
They run the knife and it comes right back out at
We're dry 6 foot, 8 foot down.
Good Lord. Well, we were extremely dry. We basically didn't rain from middle of August to the middle of October. Didn't rain a drop.
We haven't had an inch since, I would say, the 1st of September total.
Oof. What's that doing to the wheat crop?
Wheat crop looks like the devil.
Interesting.
Yeah, and the further south you go, the worse it is.
Of course, we don't have much wheat up here. That's mostly straw.
You need to get 2 hours south of us for there, and a lot of those guys, Interstate 70, which would be St. Louis, Terre Haute, a lot of those guys right there still don't plant wheat anymore. They plant corn or beans.
Well, I've got friends that drive back and forth to St. Louis, and they're very surprised to how little wheat they see.
It used to be 40% wheat there. It's probably less than 10 now.
When you get ripped $2 a basis, that's...
Yeah, the basis. Unless you, on the day it hit 868, sold wheat that day, the basis is $1.50 to $2, and why sell something for $4?
Well, the basis down here has really come in. We dropped 25 under here just a few days ago from 50 under.
We're up $1.50 to $2 in, around here.
Well, there's no reason to ooh with wheat with that basis.
You're looking at the wrong thing on wheat when you look at basis. You got to look at flat price.
$4.
Basis doesn't do you any good.
$4.
Sounds like a commercial guy in here.
I've been fixing the basis on a lot of crops.
I think you're all looking at the wrong thing. You got to look at what the acre program is going to pay out for the next year.
That's a big one.
Yeah, like Dan said, straw and sell to horse guys.
New crop bean basis is surprisingly strong. I've sold beans as good as even here the last week or so, which I, you know, last time we were at high levels, it was $1 and $2 under. What does that say?
There's something going on there. I think Pete's talked to several guys. A lot of these companies are trying to pre-buy beans already, and they don't even have the seed yet to plant.
Wait a minute. I don't get that.
You mean farmers or farmers. The elevators?
Yeah. Farmers.
Farmers trying to sell beans ahead of time and don't even have the seed bought.
Oh, well, they'll get the seed. That's not a hard one to get the seed bought. I mean, I hadn't bought my seed yet, but I've certainly sold a huge amount of basis.
But if we have an acreage shift, will there be enough seed? We should have enough seed because the crop in the Midwest was amazingly good.
Yeah. Which brings us back to, and you didn't answer yet, you can put any of the three in the ground, and it looks as if the potential is the same. Which crop do you choose? Corn, cotton, or beans?
I'm choosing beans for now because it costs half as much to put in. I would like to plant some corn if they got it up good because your risk of, we harvest corn mid-August, and it's nice to have it out of the way. If you got all of them point the same needle, I'm probably going to end up with a little bit of corn and a lot of beans and a little bit of cotton. Your obvious answer is beans have less risk because there's less in them.
That's probably good news for corn growers up here.
Well, I don't think there's going to be a great big corn acreage down here unless they start really bidding the basis. They're going, you know, if they come out with something like 30 or 40 over September futures, that would change things.
John, when you do your budgeting and marketing, do you try to get chuck this sold ahead of time or hedge it ahead of time so you know exactly where you're at then?
Oh, yeah. I'm 70% hedge for next year and 30% hedge for 12. And, you know, it's just if you get a big profit on paper, I'm for taking it. I've been farming since 86 and have never been forward premiums like this. I mean, double cropping wheat at $8 the other day, $7.90, and sold a lot of that for 12. That's very profitable, double cropped. And, you know, we've seen times when on paper you couldn't make anything farming. I have, let's put it that way.
Can the livestock producer, the poultry producer, manage their way through this process? Anybody?
Somebody's going to have to blink at some point in time.
Isn't it amazing the broiler chick sets have stayed up so well?
Yeah, so the question is, which sector? Beef? Does beef blink first? They have the longest production cycle.
That'd be my guess. Beef and then hogs, chickens going to be last. We eat a lot of chickens in this country. I mean, you just go to any restaurant.
A lot of chicken.
Yeah, just go to any restaurant and see how many people are eating a chicken.
Are we going to drive the beef business out of this country?
Hope not.
I hope not, too. I still like greasy, lardy food.
Good stuff.
Yeah,
good stuff.
Yeah, but people like you aren't going to live very long. So.
That's nice.
That's true.
He's been doing pretty good so far. On the livestock sector, it's probably more of a question to ask the banker. I think these guys are just going to keep going until the banker says no more.
Well, which part of, you know, we said beef, but which part of the country? I mean, does it make very much difference, for instance, if you're out west and you're in the big feedlot? Some of those guys out west are mostly grass-fed, and then they supplement with grain. And then, of course, we've got the Midwest here, and our, most of the USDA high-end cuts come from our part of the world because it's all grain-fed. So do we know? Got an idea? Does it matter very much?
I heard a guy talking the other day, and this is just talk, that he gets a lot of his feed from the local ethanol plant.
And he gets the DDGs.
And that has helped him a ton.
Yeah. You know, that's something we all need to think about in relation to feeding, like corn feeding. I mean, the DDG exports are just going out of sight. So even though we're having an increase in ethanol production, which is bearish on U.S. feed consumption, if we're exporting it all, then the availability of DDGs to the domestic market this year is actually going to be less than last year, which is sort of a strange thought.
Right. Yeah, because it all gets shipped in the containers, so they put them on train, and they come out of Joliet and someplace else. I'm thinking about this, and they ship them to the Pacific coast. Well, they're containerized, and then they get to go back as ballast. They're free on board onto the ship.
Hmm.
So they head mostly to China.
End up with China with no tariff on it.
Uh huh.
Whereas corn has a tariff.
Yeah.
So
lots of DDGs. There are plants in the northern part of Illinois where 95% of their DDGs are containerized, and they go to export market. And that's in the middle of, you know, we're a long ways from the Pacific coast, but they put them on train and ship them. They have to pay the freight. I know that pretty much as fact.
Yeah, but they come back with China goods in
but
them.
And that's the reason.
That's why there's a market.
They go to China and Korea, and then they come back with goods in them.
Those are backhauls. That's the backhaul.
Yeah,
the front load is the stuff that's made in China going to Chicago.
Hmm. Amazing.
It is amazing. look at this year, we're going to export 2 million more tons of DDGs than last year. You know, that's 80 million bushels of corn, you might say.
Hey, wait a second. Speaking of which, you said you thought that we could be, I was just thinking about this, we could be another 200 million bushels of corn for ethanol, right?
More than the USDA.
Yeah, so you're saying 5 billion bushels, or, you know, 5 billion bushels of corn.
We're actually running a rate higher than that. But anyway, 5 billion.
I don't think we can actually go that high. I think we hit the blend wall before. I don't remember what. Do you know, Dan, what the number is on gallons?
No,
gallons and bushels.
No, I don't. I'm not that boned up on the bushels.
Yeah,
on the gallons.
I'm not sure. It, that would be awful close because we're running at 350 million. We're about 350 million bushels greater than the mandate for this year.
What?
But the blend wall would be at roughly 15 billion gallons, and we're not too far away from that. We might get awful close.
Well, 15 divided by 3 is 5. That's 5 billion.
You're right. We could make that.
They usually
divide by 2.8, so I guess there's
more
than that.
Yeah, well, I'm just doing it for quick math, but
yeah.
you get the weekly numbers every week, so you're looking at them. It's not a great mystery.
And one thing, I don't necessarily think the blender's credit is a sure deal.
Yeah, yeah. What if that stops January?
That's the scariest thing.
I don't think – I think if it doesn't get passed in this lame duck session – and the way things look, nothing might cannot get passed. I don't think it can go across the finish line in the new Congress.
Well, certainly. Really? Yeah. Certainly, there's precedent because the biodiesel.
Yeah, look at the biodiesel.
Just got left setting.
But the difference is mandates. You know, in the biodiesel deal on January 1st, it's now a mandate that you have to use it. You know, I unfortunately own part of a plant, Danville, but. It's an interesting scenario. No biodiesel credit, but a mandate that you have to use it.
Well, ethanol.
Well, that'll drive the market, though.
Ethanol
that's demand.
Ethanol
will
have a mandate too.
But see, that's the market. That'll drive the market. Prices will have to go up to a point to encourage it.
Yeah. So it's still frightening. If they don't do something about it, the markets are get real scared about it because you're talking about damn near 5 billion bushels of usage out of 13 and change. So. Big deal.
Well, the mandate will still be there, and they'll have to still meet that. And then but I think the scary part is, what if they stop? I mean, what if you get to January 1 and the blenders say, yeah, I don't think so, and then they start using their RINs? And I, to the best of my knowledge, there's about that's the a renewable identification number or the this is funny. Gallons that have already...
It's excess gallons.
Yeah, well, it's not excess gallons. It's gallons that have already
been used,
excess above the mandate.
Right.
So they're used gallons, but they're not actually available gallons. They're mm-hmm. just sort of used gallons that you can put into the system. But there's... So if you say you go back to the mandate, that is at... I just told you 350, so what is it? It's at 4450, apparently. 4,450 million gallons or bushels, and there's something like 400 to 700 million in RINs hanging around that have to
be
used.
Well, but you got to think, I think you also have to put the demand factor of crude oil. It is growing outside of the U.S. There is growing demand for oil.
Oh, you should have seen the look he just gave me.
And, you know, OPEC says they're not necessarily going to increase production. So, ethanol could very well be profitable without all that stuff too. You don't know.
Yeah,
that's the thing you don't know. And
well, that's the thing you actually hope, right? Is that ethanol is growing to the point that it's profitable?
We'll be able to use without it. And I don't know that you can depend on this government or any government for any help down the road on anything that they said they're going to help with.
I have a hard time getting anything through Congress.
Anything the government gives, they can take away.
That's certainly true.
And they can actually take away more.
How do you think they're going to feel about the farm states if they take away the ethanol stuff? I think that would be interesting to see.
It's not going to be popular, but I don't know. I think the politics here in the next 2 to 3 weeks between now and Christmas are really going to be interesting. And I guess it's at least it sounds to me like everybody's wanting to dig in the heels.
Okay, so,
and not get anything done.
All right, so ethanol is on the block, maybe not passed. How about the Bush tax cuts? Will they be extended?
Well, I think the Republicans will be happy to pass them after they go up if the Democrats are foolish enough to
not to put those get passed in the lame duck.
I think it's totally, but I don't think they're too dialed in on the country right at the moment. So
they don't understand how bad it is out in the country, how the real person feels that it's not any better, and whatever you're doing out there isn't working.
True, and I think another scary thing is quantitative easing. It could blow up in the whole country's face, i.e. interest rates skyrocket as we have quantitative easing because people lose confidence in the Fed. It's interesting, since we've had the QE2 announcement, rates have gone nothing but up.
Doesn't that create a problem for the landowner?
Absolutely.
A big problem for the landowner, even if they own, I mean, just even if they own it flat?
Well, it's like that conference up there in Danville. I mean, the guys I sat around with at the table, they were more interested in the interest rate than they were the price of the land, which I just thought was amazing. But, you know, low interest, they can do anything.
And high interest, you can do nothing.
Exactly.
You're caught with inventory that you can't sell.
Yeah.
Land.
Yep.
Houses.
You name it.
So what's corn price going to be by spring and just summer? Are we going to get through this negative time and have it really go to make new highs from this year?
I think there's a possibility we'll completely run out of corn.
That would put new highs in.
I wouldn't want to be short of anything for corn in August or September delivery. I don't know where they're going to find it. You know, under a billion bushels, you're more or less out anyway because that's pipelines. But, gosh, if you get down to 200 or 300 million bushels, yeah, that's just frightening.
You need another early harvest? Need another early planting, early harvest?
Yeah, not going to get in the south.
How much do you think they'll change the bushel number in January on last year's crop?
Gosh, I have no idea. What do y'all think?
On yield?
Yeah. You think they'll go another bushel down or not?
A lot of it depends on how bad they screwed up on September 1 stocks. if they pulled 150 million bushels forward in the last year, well, there's a bushel and a half there.
Right there. Yeah. That's true.
And what about the bean number? I still find it hard to believe the bean yields are as low as they have them.
Well, that's puzzling, too.
Y'all find that puzzling also?
Well, especially in our neck of the woods when you hear a lot of people talk about mid-60s and 70s.
70s, 80s. And, the beans made more than the corn did.
You know, but we're looking out our back door. But
sure were a lot of back doors, though.
There sure is. There's a lot of back doors. A lot of breeze going through the house.
You know, from every place north of us, it looked like they were getting record yields. Now, we had horrible yields down here, my God.
Well, we've talked a lot about the corn market, and everybody seems to be feeling pretty healthy on it.
Long term,
that is. How about soybeans? I mean, where does that... and I take it that you're in the same boat, John, with soybeans as you are in corn.
Not really. I worry that they've underestimated the U.S. crop, and certainly these high bean prices should attract A, more acres, and B, better productivity. So that scares me, South America, I guess is where I'm seeing. But I'm not so hot on the beans as corn looks really hot, really something.
Yeah, but so to be clear, you're thinking at this point, if you were to pull the trigger, you'd do it on beans, but you would have everything locked down, right? You'd be marketed out?
Oh, now you mean as a farmer or as a speculator?
No, as a farmer.
As a farmer, I'm 70% hedged.
All right.
For next year, some hedge for 25-30% in wheat beans.
I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that while you were concerned about the beans, that you still
because I've got several customers that sold half their crop for next year already, cash.
Well, I've sold 70% of mine.
Yeah, but I mean they've done that. Then they've got hedged. I mean, yeah, they think these prices ought to be sold. Period.
Yeah, I don't doubt that.
You think that's bearish?
Not necessarily. Depends on how good consumption is.
How many acres we're going to grow instead of corn if we are really going to grow more beans? And I don't know that we will.
Well, at some point in time, something's got to blink. Somebody's going to blink. And my guess is that the market is going to – this is just a guess, like everything – is that corn's going to have to try to buy some acres. It's going to have to shore up acres. And then eventually, then that's going to take acres away from beans, and then eventually the bean balance sheet tightens up, and then beans are going to have to catch up at some point in time, whether it's next summer or next fall or whatever. But somewhere here, the market is going to have to shore up corn acres. And, you know, we could maybe wait till April – May and spike the market and then kill demand. Something's got to change in the corn supply demand balance sheet.
I agree. You're going to have to buy acres at some point. I don't think the market's buying any acres at this point.
I don't think the needle's moved at all.
I agree with you totally. Which is scary. I mean, you got Inform out there saying we're going to have 93 million acres. Well,
they may be right in the long run, but I don't think that's. I don't think that's in the hopper.
They're not
yet.
Right today.
No, I think as Pete mentioned earlier, I think there's more farmers today that are going to be flexible and let this thing play out. And you know, we're talking about moving those marginal acres back and forth. We're not talking about moving whole farms. So a farmer, he could get himself 80% committed, and he's going to take that last 20%, and he's going to go with whatever the market's telling him to do next winter or next spring. So that's why I think we're kind of in an interesting deal. The market may kind of go from one pendulum to the next, back and forth, as they try to move that needle through the winter months and spring months.
I agree. You know, from the other side of the coin, you can certainly talk to people in the Corn Belt. They're saying, well, fertilizer prices are going up and corn-on-corn yields are terrible, so we're going to move to beans. And then you got other crowds saying, well, the spring wheat guys are going to plant the heck out of beans because spring wheat prices aren't as profitable as bean prices. So,
a lot of the corn-on-corn guys, though, had several things to blame it on that we don't have this year. They didn't get their tillage done. They had tons of water after planting that washed away whatever they did put on, and then we had superheat, and they've had tons of tillage this fall, tons of the anhydrous put on this fall and in the spring, and they'll be ready to side dress. This spring was just an act to get it done, and they didn't in places do much field work to get it done, and all that plus the superheat that they stacked couldn't handle.
It was the nighttime. It wasn't daytime.
It was nighttime.
It was nighttime temperatures.
But the stacked, they found out all this stacked stuff couldn't handle that. So there's still a lot of corn and corn guys are not going to switch at all because they think they have a plan that'll take care of those things.
What's going to happen if the rains don't come next spring and we're 1988?
We won't have corn or beans. We are very dry.
I'm sitting here looking at the Mississippi River as we talk, and it's pretty low.
All right. All up, all done. I'm so glad everybody could stay with us for the whole time. We talked a long time today. I've got 50 minutes in the show. John, thank you so much.
Oh, enjoyed. Thanks for having me. I always enjoy it.
John Bondurant, of course, is with Bondurant Futures. He's in Memphis, Tennessee. In studio with us, Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Dan Zwicker of ADM Grain Group from Decatur, Illinois. And Pete Manhart of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. That's Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.